Welcome back to the Diary of a CFO podcast, the podcast where finance leaders share the lessons, challenges, and wins that shape their careers as well as their organizations. Today's episode is brought to you by FiSpend. By embedding banking services directly into ERP and accounting software, FiSpend streamlines financial workflows, reduces costs, and minimizes manual errors, and enhances, of course, efficiency for business of all sizes. I'm your host, Wasia Kamon, and today I'm super delighted to have with me Cheryl Shaw. She is a senior manager at Bridgepoint NetSuite Practice, utilizing over 30 years of experience in global accounting, due diligence, transfer pricing, and global treasury. She works with clients who implement and optimize NetSuite. Now, she completed her first successful implementation of NetSuite in 2014 and has been a regular user of the software ever since. Throughout the course of her career, she has put a hefty focus on building best practices. And prior to joining Bridgepoint, she was a CFO for CPG and services companies in Austin and a senior director for large watch manufacturer in Dallas, Texas. Welcome to the show, Cheryl.
Hi, welcome. Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I definitely wanted us to start with your amazing career journey and understanding what drew you to finance and accounting in the first place.
Thanks for asking that. That was kind of an interesting role. I actually was going to school to be a doctor, and I was putting myself through school. So I was working for a company and started doing some things from them, from the accounting department, just to get myself through school. So I technically started my accounting career in 1982 as an accounting clerk. So I have seen and done everything and quickly fell in love with accounting and switched my degree to accounting.
Wow. And then from that point, did you foresee yourself joining and becoming a CFO one day?
It was always a dream. And I'll be honest, starting out as a clerk, I just looked for the next step always. Like always looking for, you know, okay, I want to be a senior accountant. I want to be accounting manager. Back in the 80s, a woman as a CFO was highly unlikely. So it was a dream, but maybe a little bit of a fantasy.
Wow. And how did you land that first CFO role? Like, what do you think are some of the things that helped you in the process?
I think it was a combination of things. I was blessed with some really great mentors from a management standpoint. So over my career, I was able to build some really great teams and have some people around me. So I learned how to really manage people, but also in those roles, those people allowed me to do things that had never been done. And so they would put me in situations where it's like, example, I think you mentioned, you know, that I worked in treasury, was putting together a treasury group. The company did not have a treasury function. And they said, we would like you just to figure that out or to figure out how to, whatever it was, they asked me to figure it out. And I think those things, when it got to the point where I could step into a role where it was always roles where they needed help. I'm not the person to fill a role just to sit in a seat. I definitely need some chaos around me.
I love it. I need some chaos around me. Now, I would like to go back to when you said you had to start a treasury group from scratch, right? Because treasury is something we don't really learn in school of accounting, right? You either do accounting or you do finance. Treasury is somewhere in the midst. So can you please share a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that's interesting. So, you know, I was trying to think back. And if you look back just in general in banking and treasury, in the 80s and even the 90s, all you had were checks. You wrote checks, you know, sometimes you could do wires or ACHs, you know, actually very rarely. But then as times progressed in the 90s, they kind of got online banking. And that was really when people started building, thinking about treasury groups, right? I was working in Dallas at the time. We had a lot of excess cash. We were very profitable. And so we needed a way to invest money, but also to move our funds around globally. And so working closely with a large bank there in Dallas, we started trying things and we helped them build their international piece of their business, as well as building and learning it for ours. And it was just being patient, asking a lot of questions, telling them that I don't know. I don't know what this means, or can you help me through this? And then being patient in return that we were able to build the treasury function. And then you look at banking today, we've gone from literally writing and mailing checks to no checks. I mean, everything's electronic banking. And then you have a company like FiSpan who works really nicely in NetSuite. And you can push and pull transactions all in your ERP. Like,
wow,
it's an entirely different world. So back in the beginning, you learned the basics. And now we're like in, you know, kind of like the space age.
And how do you bring people along with you with those new technology? Because when you said I was an accountant in the 1980s, I'm like, Excel was not really around. And so now we're talking AI, but I'm assuming human nature is still the same, right? So what would you say are your go-to moves or strategy when you're trying to bring people on board with adopting something new?
There's a couple of things when I pick team members. So one of the things that anybody that's been on my team, they'll say that I have repeated over and over. If I ask you a question as to, you know, why you're doing this or how you're doing it, if your response is that's the way we've done it, I will lose my mind. So, and the other thing is, I truly believe no matter what it is, if you've been doing the same thing for, I would say, 18 months to 2 years, then you're doing it wrong. Because there's always something you can do different and better, whether that's getting some sort of enhancement. In today's world, there's so many software opportunities, or just rethinking, you know, bringing somebody in like us that can look at it from a different set of eyes and saying, hey, listen, you know, why don't you try this and moving it forward? So team members, people around you, you've really got to have the right mindset. If they're just wanting to do their job, then they belong in a different group. They don't belong in the innovative area.
Okay. So for you, you said, okay, I'm going to bring change, and you pick the right team member. Well, what if you come in and you just inherited the team? Like, how do you bring those people on board?
That's a tough one sometimes. Patience.
Okay.
Patience and taking the time to put them under your wing, finding those individuals that are excited about learning. There's a favorite saying that I love to share, and it was actually said by Eric, and I hope I get his last name right, Shinsisky, the chief of staff. And he says, if you don't like change, you're really going to dislike irrelevance even more.
Oh, if you don't like change, you're going to dislike
irrelevance even more. Because you have to change, right? Spending time with those individuals, showing them, because a lot of times people don't want to change because they're fearful. They think that if they do something better and they're not doing it tomorrow, then you're going to eliminate their position. You have to get their confidence that doing more things and new things is going to actually give them an opportunity to expand. And so having that trust with your team members and showing them that, look, I'm even going to do it. I'm going to give you some of my things. I'm going to show you how to do some of my things. And I'm not afraid that they're going to let me go. They're going to give me more things. And so that's what I want to do. So let's learn together. What can you show me that we could do better and faster and more efficient?
Wow. And you are a CFO, and you mentioned, because you've been a CFO like 3 times, right? I really want to dive into each role and understanding one. Do you feel like from your first CFO to the third one, was it easier as you went from CFO to CFO role? Was it just as challenging? Do you think that the CFO role is extra challenging when you're a woman? Because you know, when you became a CFO, there was not a lot of women CFOs.
Yeah, I would say probably yes. In my case, I was a little bit lucky in that the men that were around me were very supportive. They just saw me as one of them. Now, nice. That hasn't been the case always. So, I mean, but mm-hmm. that gave me the confidence that I needed to learn. I did trip and fall many times, you know, and learned from those experiences. But it also, as my career progressed and maybe became in some difficult situations, I had the confidence to stand up for what I believed in and understand that it wasn't about me, it was about the situation, you know. And nice. So each one, I learned something different. Each one had its own challenges and its own successes. And I wouldn't trade any of them, even though the places that it was difficult, I wouldn't trade them because it made me who I am.
Wow. And what would you say are some of the things, because we see the CFO role evolving. And again, love talking to someone like you with so much experience. What have you seen as being very important to still be successful, regardless of how the CFO role is evolving? Because sometimes at some point, you know, CFO was accountant, then CFO, you know, you went the controller path to CFO. Now you have CFO from different backgrounds. And now CFOs are into IT and HR and so many other things. What have you seen that was striking in that evolution? And what do you think is still relevant to be successful in the role?
There are really two unique CFOs. So there's the CFO that's operational and running a business. And then there's the CFO that's really working to help funding. It's in the beginning. Those are two different types of CFOs. And that's the first thing to understand is like, make sure you know what role you're going into, because I don't think that they can cross streams. They are two different skill sets entirely. I'm the operational kind. Like that's my, you know, running a business, making sure that those things that were profitable, you know, that's really my wheelhouse, running teams, working with the operations side. The other side of the house, I don't have experience in that area. I dabbled in it and realized that was not where I belonged. So from my experience, one of the things that I think is extremely important, and I think that you kind of touched on it there, is that you need a combination of accounting and finance. And so a lot of times people come in as in the operational sense from their finance background. And I think that that does a little bit of a disservice to the operational side. I think you have to have both pieces. You need to understand the analytics behind the numbers. So I've had people do analysis for me, right? And their response would be, let's use consulting as an example. Their response would be like, you know, increased sales due to more billing hours. Okay, well, that's logical, but why are there more billing hours? Like, dive into the accounting side of it. Show me, is it a customer? Is it a, you know, so it is that combination of accounting and analytics that's needed.
Let's take a quick break to talk about today's sponsor, FiSpend. FiSpend is a leading fintech company that seamlessly integrates banks into the client's ERP and accounting systems. By embedding banking services directly into ERP and accounting software, FiSpend streamlines financial workflows, reduces cost, minimizes manual errors, and enhances efficiency for businesses of all size. For more information, head to www.fispan.com, www.fispan.com. Now let's get back to the episode. And so what would you say are the key skill set of those two different types of CFOs, right? You mentioned the operational, you run the business, and I think you kind of said it's accounting and finance, but what are really the skill set of that operational CFOs versus the other one that's more into fundraising, investments, and things like that?
So on the operational side, definitely you need to be a good manager. You have to be able to work with all the groups, operations, marketing. You have to be a people person, because you have to be able to step in a room and put on whatever face is needed, whatever mantra is needed for that room, so that you can talk to them at their level. Again, gaining trust, making sure that they want to come to you as a trusted advisor. And that's from both years of working in the accounting, so closing the books, being a controller, but also knowing how to manage a budget, provide analysis and or good answers to the CEO, being able to talk to your CEO so they can understand it. Not all CEOs are finance people. Find a way to really be able to communicate to them at their level in all the areas.
And then on the other type of CFOs, what do you think are the main skill set there?
Yeah, those people are much more outward facing. They have skills in economics and working with investors. It's a sales-ish job.
Like investment banking background.
Absolutely. Okay. So they're selling a story. They're good spin doctors. They're highly skilled individuals in what they do. But that same personality is not going to be able to step into an area where you're really trying to gain trust with a team, because those are two different skills.
Yes. And they probably have to rely more on the chief accounting officer, for example, to be that operational person, right? Because you still need the right financials.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So I can see how you being in more of an operational CFO, it was probably easier to transition into where you are now as a consultant, because you probably learned what life is really internally. So what was the transition like for you, and how are you able to bring what you've dealt with really as a CFO to where you are now?
It was, I would say, probably the last 4 or 5 years of before I, you know, went into consulting. I had been thinking about it, because in my mind, I have always picked a company that needs help. Like if once, and that's, you know, like my very first CFO role, once we kind of got everything sorted, we sold the company and they offered me to stay there, but then I would have had, there was nothing for me to do except for
no chaos.
Right. Exactly. So giving that, I thought, well, it would be nice to be able to kind of pitter patter in multiple chaoses, right? Mm-hmm. In the consulting, because that's all it is. I mean, they're only coming to us because they have a problem. I've always had that in the back of my mind, but I was also fearful that I wouldn't be good at it, like that I needed that team. I would be an individual, but I really wanted to, I like the team atmosphere. When I first, my very first role, thankfully, because again, I was working a lot of hours before consulting. So that was the other thing, right? Pacing yourself down to like a somewhat normal job. Mm. Well, my very first role was very chaotic. And so it was a good feeder into consulting as it, you know, wind down, another opportunity came up. So I was like, oh, okay, I see how this works. This is good. The best part of consulting has been being able to help whoever it is that we're working with. We all like to be patted on the back or said that you've done a good job. I mean, for me, that like, that's the end all. Like, you don't have to pay me a gazillion dollars. Just tell me that I did something to help you. In consulting, every time you leave or you're in there, they love you because you're fixing something for them. So it's very gratifying. And I really fell in love with it.
Nice. And I'm not glad you, the kind of consultant people are happy about when you leave, because that there's a big difference there too. It means you're good.
That's true.
It means you're good. So now that you're leading, you know, finance transformation, really, like you step into chaos and you're helping people do the right thing and get out of the chaos. What are some questions you wish leaders would ask before starting such an initiative? Because there is chaos, there's a lot of noise. Like, what are some of the things that can help them have clarity so that the process is done the right way?
I would say, first of all, make sure that you're really ready for the change. So they think a lot of times they, you know, they're like, oh, we know this isn't working right and we need somebody to come in. But then, you know, when you start talking about the things that need to be done, they're like, oh, I mean, we can't do that. I mean, that's going to disrupt operations. And it's like, well, sometimes it starts in operations. Oh, we can't cross that streams. Well, does operations know that you're working on this project? Oh, no. So it's like making sure that whoever, whatever it is, the project that you're working on, that you've already got together with the team, whether that's finance, accounting, operations, whoever, make the CEO, whoever it is, make sure that everybody's on board. And in the very beginning, everybody starts on the same page. You don't do it in silos. Working as a team is key because everybody has buy-in. Once they know that accounting is working with the operation side or accounting's working with the CEO, then everybody's on board. And then that makes it easier to step in and make change.
So when you say make sure your team is ready for change, like what are some questions or things that can help a leader do it? Because like you said, I totally agree. On the surface, it sounds like we all ready for change. Like me, I'm always ready for a diet. Like you think I'm going to change eating Cheetos, but I'm really not. Probably the same.
Fewer, maybe. I don't know.
Exactly. But how are you able to really gauge that readiness for change?
Sometimes we don't know until we get in there. Sometimes it's deceiving. They say that they are. I will be honest, not the majority of the people who are coming to us and asking for our help, they will tell us up front. So this group is going to be difficult. If those kinds of comments come out in the beginning, then you know you're in a good place because they've self-assessed. They've looked at themselves and they know where the issues are and what needs to happen. So that gives us a comfort. We can delicately step into those. The people that come in and they're like, they want to do all these things. And then the first call that you get on, you start talking through it. And they're like, oh, no, we don't need to look at that. No, we don't need to go there. That's when you know you're in a little bit of a hurt. So typically, we, Bridgepoint, we do what we call first discovery calls. So we try our best to ask questions about the team, the atmosphere. We call them pain points. Their pain points, what it is that they're feeling, what their expectation is. We are taught actually to go for the no. So when we're talking to a client, we really want them to really want us. We want to work with somebody that wants to work with us. And it's okay if they don't want to, or it's okay if we don't want to take that client because it won't work if only one of us is doing the job. We have to work together. So we are taught to go for the no. So we ask those questions up front to try to go for the no. Sometimes we're surprised in the middle of the project, but not all the time.
What you just said, it's so valid to from the inside, right? Like having those conversations internally to make sure we are on the same page before starting a rollout.
Absolutely.
What could be like a recent rollout you just did and you're very proud of or really made the difference? And what was the process like?
Let's see. We've done a couple. Again, it's the people that we are working with that allow us to kind of become part of their family, really embed ourselves in their team. I've said it multiple times now, the trusted advisor, the being trusted. That's really the key is when they start coming to you as, you know, we need your advice. That's when you know that you're locked and loaded. Then, you know, you can take baby steps to getting them where they need to be. We helped a client here in Austin go from their QuickBooks to NetSuite. They are a manufacturer of some food products that get sold at a local store here. They're a small team. The people in charge were very leery about letting other people in and helping. They kind of knew what they were doing. As our consultant was able to get in there and really make them feel comfortable, they would call her on a regular basis and just ask her. Like after we kind of got through everything and got them working, they would just pick up the phone and say, hey, listen, what do you suggest we do here? And like, can you help us out? That's when we know that we've really done what we need to do. And they've become somebody that we can rely on for future opportunities, you know, advice. So yeah, they're in a much better place and we feel like we have a new friend.
Oh, that is so cool. And I love how you said trusted advisor, right? Because even within a company, you have to be a trusted advisor now, I feel, in finance, especially with how AI is going, what people expect from people within a finance and accounting function. So what would you say are some of the things that, whether you are inside or outside an organization, will help you be a better trusted advisor?
I definitely think stopping and listening, really paying attention, being honest with your responses, even in the tough situations, letting them know. Sometimes they know they have dirty laundry. You don't want to just point it out, but you need to not just leave it in the room. We need to address that, right? It's the timing of those things. And when they're ready to hear that, you kind of know then you're in a good place. It really is listening, and it's listening with your eyes and your ears. So I will say a blessing beyond blessing is getting to work from home and doing a lot of our communication on video, because you can see people's expressions. You can tell when they're, because you can see everybody, right?
And so you can tell at once.
You can tell when they're paying attention, when they're bored with what you're talking about, when they're interested. Right? When they're offended, whatever, right? So it's pretty nice because you can really pay attention to body language, right? And use that to your advantage, because that's where you're going to step in and really get their trust, is understanding what their true needs are. So
that takes courage, right? Because when you said being honest and transparent, even in the tough times, like what helped you or helped you in the past do that? There is a part of you want to be liked, you want to be a trusted advisor. How do you balance those two in real life? Because it is very hard to do.
Yeah, I think that that was something I learned over time. And I think it was really something that I was looking for. I would tell my team always, here's the thing, tell me the truth. No matter how hard it is, I need to know what is really going on, because I can deal with that much easier than if I find out that something's going wrong, you've known about it, and you haven't brought it to my attention. That is going to make me extremely unhappy. But if you bring me those tough conversations, I promise I will listen. And I think I was like, okay, it took me many times, but it was like, well, if I feel that way, I wonder if other people also feel that way. As a consultant, isn't that our job? We're supposed to provide advice. I'll be honest, not everybody wants to hear that, right?
Yes.
And so you kind of have to know when you can say it and when you can't. Sometimes you just have to step back and let sleeping dogs lie. But those people that are really going to be successful are the ones that can hear the hard truth.
Well, thank you so much. I have two more questions for you, and then I'll let you go. This was so helpful. One, what is the advice you find yourself giving other people over and over again?
Be authentic, be honest with yourself, and in everything you do. As an accountant, in the things that we see that we're involved in, don't tread lightly on doing something that's crosses the line. You know, stay true to yourself, be honest.
Love it. And my last question, what is your favorite thing to do outside of work?
Outside of work. So I am quite the beach bum. So I love hanging by the pool or going to the beach, but I also love gardening. And I'm not a vegetable gardener. I am a flower gardener. So I like taking care of the yard, enjoying, you know, the outdoors. So those are the two things.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. I'm a gardener, but the food ones and the deers ate everything, but that's a different topic. It hurts.
Oh, man.
It hurts when you're growing food and it's gone, or they bite into something and, you know.
Yeah, then they leave the rest.
Yes. Oh, gosh. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show. This was super helpful. I love how you give feedback. I really love how you lay it out, and you can tell it's coming from such great experience. So thank you so much for being on the show and sharing these great gems.
Thank you too for inviting me. It's been wonderful.
And that's it for today's episode of The Diary of a CFO. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to like, review, subscribe, and share with others. Our website is thediaryofacfo.com. That's where you can find all the episodes, access all the guest profiles, see their bios and their social media links. It is also the place where you can apply to be a guest on the podcast and have information about how you can sponsor the show. As always, if there is any topic you would like me to cover in the future, just email me at ask@thediaryofacfo.com. Again, the email is ask@thediaryofacfo.com. See you soon.